Good evening, everybody. This is Dr. Dennis Tien. This is the Dr. Football Podcast, NFL Free Agency Edition. It's been quiet for a few weeks, and then all of a sudden, in the last 4 or 5 days, the NFL world has just blown up, and there is so much going on, and all of it, as always, or a lot of it, seems to tie back to Foxborough. I'm recording with my main man, the CEO of Hedgebetter, Justin Fine. Justin, how are you tonight?
I'm doing all right, man. Getting over a little bit of a chest cold, feeling better. Obviously, NFL free agency's helping a bit, right? It's been a long couple weeks since the Super Bowl. Glad to have some football back in our lives, right?
Yeah, well, that's the deadest spot of not just the NFL calendar, but the whole sports calendar. Yeah. Is really mid-February to right about now. And then this week you get NFL free agency, March Madness this weekend. And it's really all up from here. All up from here.
Yeah, no, 100%. Honestly, you know what? It's kind of nice. You take a little bit of a hiatus and then bang, you get hit with it all at once and, you know, feels good to be back.
Absolutely. You know, and you know, Justin, we got a lot of topics to cover on the podcast tonight. And I was going to start with really what I think was earth-shattering news last night, and that's Tom Brady. And we are going to get to Brady, but I think with the breaking news of the last hour or two about J.C. Jackson, I really feel like we have to start in Foxborough with the Patriots and this J.C. Jackson situation. I am so frustrated. I have mixed feelings about this J.C. Jackson thing for a long time. And the statistics say, if you really look between the numbers, you know, Pro Football Focus ranking, quarterback completion percentage against, touchdown passes given up, interceptions, quarterback rating against, which I'd say is probably the most important stat.
Yep.
The stats say that J.C. Jackson is a top five NFL corner.
Yeah.
And you look at the number that the San Diego L.A. Chargers gave him, and that, more than anything, is what infuriated me. J.C. Jackson did not break the bank. He got a very modest, fair contract for his services, averaging out 5 years, $82 million, $16.5 million a year. That is way less than I thought he was going to get. I know it's a lot of money, but it is infuriating to me that the Patriots are going to let this guy walk. I look at this Patriots roster, Justin, and personally, I see a bottom 10 roster right now in the NFL. And I said that all last season. This team is not super talented. They still have a lot of holes. They have a ton of holes on both sides of the ball, especially on defense. It is so frustrating to me that they are going to let this player walk. And what makes it so frustrating is not just the number. That's the first thing. What makes it so frustrating is Duke Dawson. What makes it so frustrating is Cyrus Jones. What makes it so frustrating is Jo'Wan Williams. Okay, there is nobody in queue to take the baton. Why? Because the same song, the same record playing over and over and over again. They've blown too many draft picks. They have nothing there to back up now that J.C. Jackson's gone. They got Jonathan Jones coming off an injury. They got Jalen Mills, who's a depth piece and a role player, hybrid corner safety, and nothing else. Literally nothing else, with no prospect potentially to get anything else, certainly if they're not going to want to spend any money. Justin, what's your take on this J.C. Jackson thing? Do you find this as frustrating as I do?
Yeah, very frustrating. And I'm looking right now at some of the other free agents on the market, and I just wonder what their plan is. You know, there's guys out there, but I just don't know how much cheaper you're going to get them for than what you would have got J.C. Jackson at. And I just feel like he proved it. He's been good. He's been reliable. I don't understand why you wouldn't resign him, especially if he's willing to take the money that he did. And who knows, if you kept him in New England, he might have even taken a little bit less. I don't know that for a fact, but maybe he would have taken a little hometown discount. It's super frustrating, man, especially because we were saying how, you know, this team at times last year seemed like they were a couple pieces away from being a contender. And then at other times, you know, we pointed to some of their lack of depth and second in, you know, the secondary. Once guys like, you know, obviously once Gilmore was you know, deemed not coming back. And then, like you said, they lost Jonathan Jones, blah, blah, blah. So you're just compounding a large issue that your team had. And I just feel like you're taking a step backwards. And I just don't understand the point of it.
A huge step backwards for this franchise. This is a huge step backwards for a franchise where you've got Mac Jones on this rookie contract for 4 years. Right. You're entering Jones's second year. You're losing talent and you're losing pieces so far in free agency, and you're not getting anything. Last year at this time, okay, they had already signed several players through free agency right on the first day of the legal tampering period. They came on strong. And what I want to ask you is, we were also fat and happy with big crap-eating grins in like week 10 about this free agency class they brought in last year. I think as the year went on, we had a lot of discussions that maybe that free agent class wasn't all it was cracked up to be. If you're going to let J.C. Jackson walk, if you're going to let Ted Karras walk, if you're not going to go out and get any top-level talent in this free agency class in 2022 – does that put a new context to what this team did in 2021? They were so aggressive last year. They brought in all these high-priced guys. Not all of them worked out. And even the ones that did, you could argue that even Hunter Henry and Matt Judon, the way he finished the year, they didn't quite meet the level of investment that they were given by the Patriots. Now, if you're going to say in 2022 that you're handcuffed and your hands are tied and you're unwilling to go out and get top talent this year because of what you did last year, then I think that that really pushes the needle towards that 21-21 class being another failure for the front office of this team and this franchise.
It's 100% a failure. And again, it's, you know, it's a little early, right? So like, I know they had made a bunch of moves by this point last year. Look, I get that. There's still some good free agent cornerbacks that, you know, if they were able to land a couple of them, I'd be okay with. There's some good guys out there, guys, good young guys out there, guys like Rasul Douglas, guys like Levi Wallace, guys like, who else? I saw a couple others. Charvarius Ward's decent, and there's a few others. We can go on and on. But anyway, look, I just really think that, you know, this team, like you said, they're going to take a huge step backwards potentially if they don't do something, you know, crazy to address this. J.C. Jackson was one of the bright spots, one of the few bright spots of that defense throughout the season. I know they kind of hit that stretch where they were looking good, but, you know, realistically proved to be a facade. It's just really puzzling based upon what you saw last year. Based upon what you thought a team like that would be capable of doing if they got a few more missing pieces and, you know, tightened up some holes, it just doesn't make sense to me. It really doesn't. And like you said, maybe it's a front office failure. But at this point, I'm starting to doubt the strategy that's in play here.
There's no question about it. You know, the one thing, and you just brought up a great point. It is early in the game. It's only one day into this thing. And we may be back here next week, and we are going to record again next week with kind of a wrap-up of everything that happens this week. We may be back here next week, and we may be saying, hey, you know, they got this guy. He's a little bit less of a good player than JC, but he's solid. And they went out, and they got this receiver, and they got and we may be happy. I mean, let's – you know, we're emotional now because of everything – with J.C. Jackson and because of just everything that's happened with this franchise the last few years. And it just feels like they're heading in the wrong direction. There is still a lot of time left, but Justin, what do you think about how this reflects on Belichick? Because I mean, it all comes back to him when it comes to the Patriots franchise. You know, my feelings about that. And the fact that I really sometimes wonder whether Belichick is becoming a weight around their neck in many ways, much like Chuck Knoll was with the Steelers, much like Don Shula was with the Dolphins, much like Tom Landry was with the Cowboys, much like Joe Gibbs was with the Redskins for a few years. I could go on and on and on. The things that Bill Belichick did that worked in 2004, that worked in 2010, that may have even worked in 2013 or 14, I don't know if those things work in 2022 NFL. And I'm going to say two things specifically to make that point. Number one, the cap might not be as relevant now as it was then. In 2004, you may have had to let that high-end talent walk out the door because you had a cap that was, relatively speaking, much more impactful. You look at the way teams are spending money, and some of these teams that are supposed to be hamstrung, like the Buccaneers and the Rams, and they're spending money like drunken sailors in free agency every single year. Maybe the cap isn't as relevant, and maybe this franchise is a little bit slow to catch up to that. And the other thing is, you need high-level talent today in today's NFL. You need high-level skill position talent. You need defensive edge rushers that can make plays. You need secondary guys that can make plays. Those are the successful teams. You look at the teams making runs in the playoffs the last 3 or 4 years, making winning Super Bowls the last 3 or 4 years. They tend to have those guys. The Patriots have undervalued that top-level talent for years. It worked for a long, long time. I don't know if it works in 2022 anymore. What is the reflection, Justin, on Bill Belichick, the personnel guy, right now, based on what we've seen this year and really the last few years?
What do you mean, like what is my personal takeaway? Like, what do you?
Yeah, like what do you yeah. think? Do you think Bill Belichick is still a good, is running the franchise properly off the field in terms of how he handles the cap and personnel and who he's bringing in?
Well, look,
are you questioning him yet? Because I know you haven't been for a while.
I'm on the verge of it. It's definitely going to be a full blown, investigation if he doesn't make any moves in free agency. I mean, look, last year it almost seemed like he was throwing the bag at free agency. He was bringing people in because we all thought, hey, maybe Bill's turning a leaf. He's balling out in free agency. He knows he has to keep his franchise relevant. He has to keep him able to compete, right? And he's obviously, he's got to contend with guys like the Bills. He's got to contend with guys like the Chiefs. So it's difficult, right? But I was looking for, a continued build. I wasn't just looking for like a one-and-done performance out of him where he goes and brings in a bunch of people that makes us happy and makes us a little bit better. I was looking for that to continue to happen to the point where we were restored to the greatness that we had for those 2 decades that we grew so accustomed to. And now it's looking like, what was a good start last year is going to get derailed by just another year of questionable decision-making. And it's a shame. Again, we've said it's still early. There's a lot that can still happen, but it's a very interesting situation right now.
Do the Belichick methods still work? The things we all went gaga for 20 years, the Patriot way, do those ideas still work? And let me ask you a follow-up question to that. Did they ever work, or was it just that they happened to have Tom Brady, right? Because I kind of think they did work. I really, I think a lot of this stuff he used to do was really smart. I just think the league has changed so much. I mean, it's a combination of losing Brady and a changing, evolving league. What's your take? Did the Belichick methods, do they still work in 2022?
I think they're becoming a little outdated. I really do. Like, we're just seeing the league get more and more player friendly, just in terms of, with some of the contracts, with a bunch of the ruling changes, they want to protect, the star players. They were especially, offense, quarterbacks, etc. We're really just seeing, I think, that players have kind of come to the standpoint that, look, we want to play, we want to get paid, but I don't know if it's as easy to buy into the Patriot way as it was 10, 15, 20 years ago. I mean, at the time, when you had a bunch of young, hungry guys and, you're all looking to make a name for yourself, Bill included, Tom included, that's one thing. But now, Tom's gone, Bill's a little older, and it just feels like things are going a little stale. It really does. Like, doesn't it? Like, doesn't it just seem like kind of like...
It does. It does, Justin. And I'm going to tell you, look back at the history of this league. Every single one of these super, super coaches that won multiple Super Bowls, they all eventually hit a point where they became a liability and an albatross, a weight around the neck of the franchise. I'm really not so sure we're not there already. I mean, with him, and I'm just being honest, like, you know, you look at what happened this year where, I mean, we talked last episode we recorded about the brain drain and all these young guys that leave the organization. And one of the reasons why they do that and that happens so consistently is because Belichick is so firmly entrenched at the top of this organization. There's no path up for anyone. So guys get in here, they get a little bit of success, and they bolt as soon as they can because they know they're never going to have a chance to truly have an impact because Belichick is always going to be the top standing in the way. Things like that, you really have to be special as a GM, as a coach, to justify that. And I'm not sure he is that anymore. I mean, that's one big thing that I look at besides the fact that the methods not working, besides the fact that I don't think he's putting in as much as he used to. I just feel it's all adding up and it might be time to think about what the next step is for the franchise.
Yeah, it's definitely looking like that could be the direction we're heading in. We have another long, you know, I know it just started today and there's a lot of hype, but like we've said, there's a lot of free agency left. There's a lot of offseason left. And then, you know, the Patriots are usually pretty good for an early season trade or two. It's heading that way, but I'm not ready to call it. I'm not ready to say that yet, but it's getting harder and harder to keep defending Bill and to keep finding the silver linings. It used to be really easy to find. You know what I mean? Like Bill, and this is the thing. Bill has always, I feel like, made these questionable decisions that make us, and we know this as Patriots fans, as fans of the NFL, you know this. Bill has always made questionable decisions when it comes to both, personnel, even play calls at times, and we always look for the silver lining because we were winning. We were winning Super Bowls. We were always the top dog. We were, you know, the franchise that everyone aspired to be. And now when you don't win Super Bowls and you don't have the greatest of all time running your offense, et cetera, it starts to lose, you know, that mystique. You stop looking for the silver lining and you start asking yourself, you know, what the hell is wrong? And like you're saying, has this actually been a problem for way longer than we thought that was masked up by, you know, a very talented individual that we had here? So, yeah, it's getting very suspect at this point, I got to say. And when you don't amplifies.
Yeah, it amplifies it. And we've talked about this before once or twice, but, you know, and I was going to bring this up later, but you take all the stuff we're talking about. We haven't even mentioned the organizational structure, the coaching staff structure, and not having coordinators. And I'm sorry, if Belichick keeps doing things his way, when they work, that's great. You're a genius. But when they don't work, that comes right back to you because you're doing things different. Like you're the smartest guy. Like you have the solution to the problem that no one else has. And you damn well, if you're going to put yourself on that limb, you damn well better deliver. And Belichick hasn't delivered now since Brady left. And if they have another mediocre year this year, and especially to me, if Mac Jones regresses this year and doesn't take steps forward, I'm sorry. To me, I think they should fire Bill Belichick. I will say that right now. It's a crazy take, but if they go 7-9 or 8-8 this year, after Belichick comes in with this ass backwards organizational structure, no defensive coordinator, no offensive coordinator for your second year quarterback. You know how I feel about that from the last episode. I absolutely detest it. I think it's a ridiculous way to structure a franchise. It's so ex-anthem. It's so unorthodox that if it doesn't work in the context of all the other things the last 5 or 6 years that he has done that are just unorthodox, that quite frankly haven't worked, I'm sorry. It's time to move on. I'll say it. Get rid of him because the longer you drag it out, the more painful it is going to be. You know, there were reports out of the combine, Justin, that other teams were flabbergasted at the Patriots organizational structure. Flabbergasted. I mean, that's a pretty strong word, I think, right there. I'm sorry, but I think it's true. And other teams are looking at them saying, what are the Patriots doing?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because, you know, we may have alluded to this in the past, but, you know, I don't think we've really talked about it, but, you know, we've always talked about, we've said before, and you know this if you're a Patriots fan, how Bill's always had the mentality that, you know, no individual player is, you know, more important than the team, right? Nobody comes before the team. You know, that's where the whole kind of, you know, next man up mentality comes from. You know, it's one of the reasons why he's been so loose with letting players walk over the years. He's set that precedent and he's stuck to it from, you know, almost too stubbornly, right? But what I think is kind of ironic, which we don't really, I guess, maybe talk about enough, is how he kind of puts himself way above the team and the importance of the team, right? Like, he makes decisions that only he sometimes understands that aren't beneficial for the rest of the team, aren't beneficial for the organizations, and leaves the rest of us scratching our heads. And, you know, I think it's just a little ironic that he almost looks at himself, or the way he acts, it's like he views himself as, like, you know, this god of football, when his whole mantra is that no individual is above the team. I just feel like he's done a lot. Now, obviously, he's won us a lot of games. He's won us championships, but he's done a lot to lose us games and championships too. And those decisions are usually because he thinks he's either smarter or a step ahead of everybody else.
There's no question about it. And anyone that's been paying attention knows that. And I've said this for years. And let's be clear about one thing. I haven't been a Bill Belichick defender. I'm not a Belichick hater, but I just know what I've seen the last few years.
Right.
Belichick's biggest weakness has always been two things. One, he's stubborn, and two, he's arrogant. And it's put his team in bad positions many, many times over the years. When the Patriots in 2016, when they had the Eagles in Foxborough, and Belichick did the onside kick, you know, for no freaking reason, and they ended up losing that game down the stretch. You know, just an arrogant decision. Things like that that he does that are really hard to understand. Why does he do them? Does he really need to be the smartest guy in the room and the football genius? You know, I don't know. I mean, maybe there's something else going on. I have no idea. It's very frustrating. It's not going to fly. It's not going to hold up well when you're going 7-9. When you're winning Super Bowls, you get away with it. And when you're a jerk to everyone too, you know, again, that's not going to hold up when you're 7-9. So I think Belichick, regardless of what happens the next week or two in the draft, Belichick's going to have a ton of pressure coming on him into this year. And I'm sorry, if it's a bad year and if Jones regresses, it's time to move on.
Yeah, I don't hate that take at all. It's going to be very interesting, and I'm very curious to see what happens with the rest of these free agents, if any of them find their way back to Foxborough, or into Foxborough for the first time. I say back because I'm looking at Stephon Gilmore right now, who's a free agent. It would be such a Bill Belichick move to pick him up now.
That would probably be a good move, right?
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind that. We were going to talk about him. All right, let's change the topic a little bit, Justin, because – besides the news about J.C. Jackson today, there was really an even bigger story that broke late last night or yesterday afternoon about Tom Brady, the greatest quarterback who ever played. And, you know, truly, I don't know if you've ever heard the phrase "jumped the shark." Okay, when a television show jumps the shark, it was a phrase like, I don't know. I think I heard it on the Howard Stern show like 20 years ago or something like that. Basically means when a television show jumps the shark, it means this television show that used to be good became terrible. Okay. And the classic example of why they got that name, it's coined from Happy Days, because there was an episode in the last season or the next to last season where Fonzie jumps a shark in a motorcycle. And it was just such a ridiculous, bad, terrible storyline that it like coined this phrase. You jump the shark, it means your best days are behind you. You've kind of become desperate for attention and really lost, you know, whatever magic you had. And that's how I feel about Brady after this absolute fiasco of an episode. I truly feel bad for Tom Brady, Justin, because he can't move on. He can't move on with his life. He's 44 years old. You've done everything that you could possibly hope to do as a football player. MVPs, every passing record, 7 Super Bowls. He proved his mettle. He won a Super Bowl with a different franchise. You know, absolutely won the Belichick-Brady thing. This guy has proven everything and beyond. He doesn't need to come back. He is either one, totally full of crap, okay, for this whole thing that happened the last week. He's either totally full of crap or this is a guy that's in inner turmoil. And my guess is it's a little bit of both. What I find really interesting about this situation is a few things, and we're just going to go through them. And I gotta see. The first one is, Justin, you know, Robert Kraft let Tom Brady chose to not put the franchise tag on Tom Brady. And that was a huge piece of leverage that this franchise had in the post-Brady era to, if not keep Brady, get something back for this franchise, leverage Brady maybe into staying, leverage Brady into signing another less than desirable contract. Bruce Arians a few weeks ago was asked, how much would it take to give up Tom Brady? And he said, multiple first-round picks. Arians held firm. He drove a hard bargain. And I think more than anything, that's why Brady's coming back. Brady wanted to leave Tampa Bay. There's no doubt in my mind. He wanted to blow his way out of town because that's the diva he's become and go for greener grass and what he saw was sunnier pastures. And Arians would not let him do it. When I think of Robert Kraft relinquishing the franchise tag for no reason and the state of this franchise now very much in flux, and then I look what Arians did and how he handled it, I'm sorry. I just think that shows you that the Patriots were really looking at this Brady situation all wrong for a long time. Justin, what is your take on the difference between how Robert Kraft handled this and Bruce Arians and the Buccaneers handled this?
Well, first off, if we want to look at the first difference, I think, you know, you just look at the constant communication that I believe is it James Light, the general manager of the Buccaneers. You know, that he's had with Tom Brady. And it seems like they're, you know, right and rightfully so, giving him a level of decision-making and input that it just seems like he didn't really get in New England. It seems like a lot of things that, this, you know, the greatest quarterback of all time should have gotten, like better weapons, you know, better contracts, X, Y, Z, whatever, you know, we kind of didn't treat him appropriately in New England. We didn't treat him like the greatest quarterback of all time. They treat him like the greatest quarterback of all time. And one of the things that Jason Light said when, you know, Brady decided to unretire, and I'm sure this was obviously said to Tom in private before that decision was made, was, hey, all right, great. Now we can load up for the 2022 season to make another run at this thing, right? And I think that's exactly what somebody like Tom Brady wants to hear. It's, hey, let's load up. Let's make a run at this thing. And they're already starting to put their money where their mouth is. They went and re-signed, you know, because the Buccaneers had a bunch of free agents coming into this year. They're already spending the money. They re-signed Ryan Jensen, 3-year deal. They re-signed Carlton Davies, their cornerback, Chris Godwin.
I mean, if there was ever a team that was supposed to be in cap jail, it's Tampa Bay.
Right.
And look where they are right now. They signed their cornerback. They signed their lineman. Patriots let theirs go.
And they're not even close to done. Like, this team is getting – I guarantee we find a few more big free agents landing themselves in Tampa Bay before free agency is over. And that just goes to show you that when, you know, we are kind of, like you said, you know, to the point of the Patriots way being a little outdated, we are kind of in the era now where ownership in coaching staffs kind of have to cater to the players and to the stars. That long gone is the day of you know, your coach trading you because you asked to be paid more those are like the old school stories you hear about you know, growing up with the old school coaches and, you know, the old tactics that used to work. Oh, they didn't take no crap, blah blah blah. But, you know, it's a different game nowadays. You kind of have to cater to these players and keep them happy. You know, we've seen players to the point of, you know, sitting out and jeopardizing their career if they don't get deals that they don't want. So, yeah, I think when you're dealing with the greatest of all time, you kind of got to, you know, give him the reins a little bit and give him what he wants. And especially if he only has another year, maybe two in him, you load up and you don't care about what happens, you know.
Well, they've definitely done a much better job of surrounding him with talent. I mean, there's no question about that. And I think that makes a difference to Brady. Even if he did want to leave Tampa Bay, I still think, you know, he looked at the situation and said, hey, you know, we will have a really good team and I've got great players around me. My question to you is, what do you think about Kraft not franchising him? And whereas Bruce Arians put his foot down, Because do you agree with me that Brady wanted to leave Tampa Bay, right?
So I don't necessarily think it's that he wanted to leave Tampa Bay. I look at the whole picture, and I look at, you know, like what we were looking at earlier, which was the list of free agents coming out of Tampa Bay, right? I think Tom saw what we all thought as fans we were going to see, which is the implosion of this Tampa Bay roster, right? They had a bunch of free agents. They were going to end up in a cap nightmare. There was no way they were going to be able to bring the band back, let alone add to it. And he probably said, yeah, I'm not in it to take a step back, you know, especially at this point. And I think that was one of the big reasons why, you know, he decided maybe the time to retire. But
I think that he was not getting along with Bruce Arians. I think he saw the writing on the wall. There were a lot of free agents. He was unsure if the team was going to be a quality team. And I think that he was trying to blast his way out of Tampa, Justin. I really do. I think he wanted them to cut him. I think he wanted them to go get someone else to play quarterback. And I think he wanted to go play in San Francisco or Denver or New Orleans or anywhere else that was a legitimate Tennessee contending team. I'm sure there was a few people on his teams on a short list that he wanted. But Tampa Bay leveraged him and didn't yield. The Patriots yielded. The Patriots got sentimental and emotional, and they let him get away, okay, not just because they failed the contract thing and they didn't pay him. That was a huge thing, yes, but because they gave up that franchise tag. And that was their last piece of leverage with Brady to push him into potentially staying here. And instead, they just let it go. Gave it away because why? Because maybe they didn't think he'd leave, because maybe they figured, you know, they're the Patriots. We have Bill Belichick. We'll figure it out. Whatever it was, they let him walk away. And the Buccaneers took a hard line and forced Brady's hand. That's why he's coming back to Tampa Bay. I'm not 1,000% convinced, Justin, that Brady will be. I mean, if Tampa Bay could make a move to get like a Deshaun Watson, I mean, who knows what will end up happening. But they're not going to let Brady walk away for nothing. And that is the cutthroat way that a franchise has to be. Patriots made a huge mistake when they gave up that franchise tag.
Yeah, that very well could be. I mean, I think it's a little bit, you know, a little bit of a different situation. I almost say that like putting like the emotional like perspective on it. Like, I just feel like Robert Kraft maybe viewed Tom a little bit more like a son and figured maybe, you know, if you can't do what's best for him right now, maybe you let him go and, you know, you do what's best for him and his career. If you know if you can't break the bank with this contract and you can't surround him with an absolute star-studded cast, maybe you let him go. Whereas I think the Bucks viewed it more as a business decision. Hey, Tom, thanks for coming. Thanks for being a Buck for a few years. If you're not going to be a Buck, well, we're certainly not going to let you go anywhere else. And if you do go somewhere else, we're going to have to get paid for it. So I don't know. Maybe.
But isn't that how you have to be, Justin?
No, it's 100% how you have to be. I just think, you know, it would be very easy for me to imagine, you know, Kraft having a little bit of a soft spot or a little bit of a lapse in toughness when it comes to Tom Brady. I could see that. Not saying that's how they should have handled it. I think it would almost be an interesting dynamic to see Robert Kraft try to strong arm Brady and jeopardize that relationship.
I mean, you can say that, but at the end of the day, their relationship seems to have completely gone down the toilet. Whatever Kraft did, you know, whatever the Patriots did, they really upset Tom Brady. And we know that because, you know, we've seen enough from Brady over the last 2 years to know that his ass is burned from whatever happened in Foxborough with Belichick and Kraft, whether they wouldn't pay him, whatever it was, whatever they did, they really, really, really pissed off Tom Brady. So the relationship ended up in the toilet anyways. This is business. Tom Brady should have never been allowed to walk out of here with getting no compensation back for this franchise. It is hard to fathom. And I give the Buccaneers credit because, in my opinion, and you may disagree with me, Tampa Bay called Tom Brady's bluff and completely leveraged him. And he's coming back. I don't think Tom Brady was ever – he should retire, I want him to retire. I want this dog and pony clown show to be over for him. I feel like what's happening now is it's really sullying, it's tarnishing his career. Rooting for Tom Brady was such a great thing because he was just a little different than other athletes. You know, he had like, I don't know, a different value system, a different aura, a different way about him, you know, so team oriented, so humble, so selfless. That is just all out the door. And it's actually Brady himself that's stomping on that grave now with the way he's handling things. I hate that Brady's coming back. I really do. I don't need to see him anymore. I think it's time for him to move on. I think it's time for the league to move on. But I have to give credit for Tampa Bay. I don't think he was ever going to retire. I think he was yanking all of our collective chains to try and get a better deal for himself. And you know what? Tampa Bay held the line and didn't let him get away with it.
Yeah, they did. You know, also, too, though, with Tom, I mean, look, Tom, he shouldn't have left the way he did, right? So, like, I can understand people saying, I'm done with him. I don't want him back. But by the same token, I didn't feel right how he exited. You know, I didn't feel like that should have been, you know, how the greatest of all time walks off, you know, and closes the curtains on the greatest career ever played. To me, it just didn't seem right. So while it might be annoying that he's back, while some people might not want to see him, might not want to deal with him anymore, just ready for him to, you know, move on and ride off into the sunset, I'm actually a little happier that we kind of get a little bit more of a dramatic ending to his career. We get, you know, he's coming back for his what should potentially be his final year. The Bucks are stating that they're going to load up. Like, that's something I can get behind as, you know, not only as a fan of him, but a fan of the game. I think that's a good narrative. You know, just dropping a surprise retirement, you know, after losing a heartbreaker and kind of just seeming like a sore sport, that wasn't really how I pitched it happening, and it didn't really sit well with me. So I don't know.
Do you agree with me, though, that, you know, there was something like, there was some sanctity or dignity to Brady's career, and it just feels like the way that, you know, everything the last few years, and now certainly this, that it just feels like that's really almost been like bastardized. Am I off base on that, Justin? Do you get that sense as well?
Huh, elaborate a little bit. What do you mean by that?
I mean, like, this guy was so much different than other great professional athletes, and it's what made him great. It made it great to root for him. You know, the kind of, regular guy, sixth-round pick from Michigan, team-oriented, didn't need stats, totally selfless, you know, bought into the whole Patriot Way thing. And it just feels like that was really sacred, I felt, to what made Brady such a great athlete to root for. And it just feels like now he's like, you know, all these endorsements. He's got this wacky method and marketing company. He's made like 500 documentaries about himself. You know, now he does this ridiculous stunt where he tries to leverage his way to a third franchise because, you know, he's not happy with the coach. And it's like, he blew his way out of New England when he you know, and I know Belichick is more responsible. I get it for him leaving here, but it's just like, it all feels like so opposite of what he once was.
Well, let me ask you this. We keep talking about how responsible Tom Brady was for, you know, the potential, you know, for the success we had over here in New England, and just, you know, just how much of a role and factor he was in that. Let's flip it. How big of a role was Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft in the Patriots way in keeping Tom Brady in check, you know, through all those years of success and accomplishments? I mean, with a different organization, different franchise, different coach, he could have become a diva a long time ago.
That's a great point. That's a great point. You know, I think you're right. I do think the guy changed a lot from where he was, you know, in the beginning and in the middle, and really right up through the last few years to where he is now. I feel like he has just profoundly changed. And, you know, I've kind of been on the fence about rooting for him. I sometimes, you know, I mean, I root for him, you know, or I've been, you know, I certainly have been rooting against him, like in a hardcore way. But after this stunt right now, the way it just feels right now, and this could change by September, Like, I really will be actively rooting against him this year. And I just, for me, for this guy being my favorite player, my favorite professional athlete, so many great memories to all of us in New England, it's hard for me to feel like this guy has become as detestable as he has become in my mind now after this stunt. But I'm sorry, that's really how I feel. I want this guy to go away right off in the sunset. You are the best athlete ever. 7 rings. It's time to move on, Tom. Hey, coming back for this year, I just think it's a huge mistake. I think it's a mistake for him. I think it's a mistake for I think it's bad. I don't want to say it's bad for the league because it's going to be interesting, but I don't know. It just feels so insincere.
So look, two things that, you know, we haven't brought up yet with Tom Brady that I just want to touch on real quickly that I personally think are big factors into why he decided to come back. If you just look at how the NFL has been shaping up, you know, the last week or so, the AFC is going to be absolutely ridiculous, right? The NFC almost looks like it's going to be a very weak conference. And the Bucks, he might look at that and say, if we put our, you know, our stuff together and we reload, I can take us back to the Super Bowl. I mean, look, his division is nothing crazy, right? You know, we see some of those teams trying to make some moves, but nothing's happened yet. You know, guys like Russell Wilson leaving, you know, there's turmoil in Seattle. Turmoil in Arizona with, you know, Kyler Murray. The NFC just looks really weak and wide open. And I really feel like maybe he feels like it, you know, it's a great chance for him to get back to the Super Bowl. The other thing, too, is we just saw Aaron Rodgers sign a 4-year max contract. And one of the things that you alluded to earlier is that Tom Brady has all of these records and accolades. He's the current record holder. And that's, you know, whether we like it or not, that's part of what makes Tom Brady Tom Brady and what adds value to his brand and makes the name Tom Brady the name Tom Brady. If you give a guy like Aaron Rodgers 4 more years, you know, a lot of those records might fall by the wayside. There might be a new name besides a lot of those records. You give a guy like Patrick Mahomes, you know, maybe he looks at him and looks at the trajectory of, you know, how late quarterbacks wind up playing, you know, nowadays versus maybe 10, 20, 30 years ago. Maybe he looks at Mahomes and says, huh, some of these records I got, they're not surefire, you know, gonna stand for the test of time. Maybe he looks at it and he feels a little bit of a sense of urgency to come back and pad the stats a little bit, because after all those records and all those accomplishments help make Tom Brady Tom Brady. So I don't know. I think those are two important factors that I thought of that I think definitely could have played a decision.
I'll agree with you on the first one, that I still think he wanted to be somewhere besides Tampa Bay. He wanted to go to San Francisco or somewhere like that for a year, and he probably does think the NFC is wide open. On the second one, you know, I don't know if that's a factor for him. Tom Brady was never about records. You know, he was always about championship. If Tom Brady's become about records, then he has truly, truly, truly changed as a player and what you know he values. I think, Justin, honest to God, why is he coming back? You want my honest opinion? I think he's afraid to move on with his life. I really, I don't think he knows what to do with himself. I think he's terrified to lose the identity that he has made for himself as the greatest quarterback that's ever played. I don't blame him. It must be hard. I would think it's very hard to move on into something else. You have become the greatest who has ever lived. Now you go to an uncertain future. I can see why he'd want to bleed every last possible drop out of that career. But the guy's 44 years old. And, you know, now it's becoming a clown show. So personally, I would, whatever the motivation was, I'm sorry that he's back. I really am. Justin, let's shift gears a little bit. I want to talk about a few moves that the Patriots have made. And then I want to talk about a few guys around the league, how you think they might fit in here. Let's start in New England. Patriots did make a couple relatively smaller moves today. Let's start with the biggest one, bringing back Devin McCourty. 1 year, $9 million contract. Justin, what's your take on returning Devin McCourty back to Foxborough?
I could just think of so many other players that I would rather that $9 million go to, like at this point, especially when we're supposed to have a couple of young, promising, you know, safeties in the secondary.
Right.
So, like, you know, I look at that and I'm like, what do you, like, safety actually seems like one position that we're kind of okay at. So, like, what are you going to spend the $9 million on someone like Devin McCourty? Like, I don't get it. Again, it's almost like part of that, like, cultish loyalty that he seems to have for, like, some of these players in New England that, you know, I don't know. I really, really don't know. I don't know what to make of it. I don't think it's a good move. I'd rather see the money go elsewhere. I don't think there's anything that McCourty can give us that some of these young guys can't. And frankly, I would rather see what we have in these young guys with, you know, the experience they have now, the ability to take the helm and be the leaders of that defense.
I personally didn't hate it until J.C. Jackson left.
Yeah.
For the reason you just said. Right? Like, if we're going to spend big money in the secondary and you just drafted Kyle Duggar, he had a good year. You've got Adrian Phillips, who was like a Pro Bowl caliber type player this year. He was one of their better players. There are other guys you could get to be kind of a depth piece. Jalen Mills can play a little safety, I think. You can probably go sign someone else. McCourty's best days, I think, are probably behind him. I know they're behind him. You know, it's not like we're signing him to a veteran minimum contract. I mean, $9 million is a significant allocation of resources. Doesn't bother me if you're going to go out and get other pieces. But if all you're doing is bringing back Devin McCourty, that just feels like you're just running your tires. It feels like you're revving the gas, running your tires, but you're not going anywhere. I'd rather have let him walk, bring someone else in.
100%. I just think it's again, this might be going back to, you know, your theory of how Belichick is just kind of losing it and he's losing touch with, you know, I guess what I don't even know what to call it. I guess the new school method of, you know, managing personnel and players. I don't know, man. It was just a very weird move. Not weird, but not surprising in the slightest.
Exactly right. That's perfectly said. What about Matt Slater? I mean, same thing, right? It's like, you know, now Slater's number is good. It's a $2 million contract. I love the guy. Again, I'm glad they're back. He brings in leadership, but I mean, God, you know, is a special teams gunner? I don't care who he is or what his background is. Is that really solving any problems for this franchise? Like, I just think this is just such a, it's just not what you want to hear if you're a Patriots fan right now. You know, teams are going out, making moves, getting stronger, bulking up, filling holes. You're bringing back a Matt Slater. I love Matt Slater. He should be in the Hall of Fame as a special teams gunner. He really should. But I think right now, you know, it's not what this team needs. And what I would point out, and again, now you just said about Belichick being slower to catch up to the rest of the league. Have you noticed that kickoffs are not as important as they used to be, and special teams plays are not as important as they used to be? And the Patriots devote such a tremendous amount of resource towards guys that can cover kicks when the league is trying to get rid of kicks and kick returns and punt returns from the game. It's amazing. It's something that I feel like you could find someone to do at this point. Slater is a terrific special teams gunner, but he's in the end of his career. $2.5 million, not a ton of money, but I hope they do more than that.
100%. And real quick with Slater too, correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, he is pretty much just a gunner on the punt, right? Like, he doesn't, it would be different if he was like a Devin Hester back there, you know, returning punts, or, you know, if he was a threat on kickoff returns, et cetera. And it just, you know, he was just a two-way special teams nightmare. And then I'd be pumped. I would be pumped to have him, you know, for $2 million and re-signed. And I'd feel great about our special teams game. But he's literally, like you said, he's literally just a gunner. He does not do anything that wows you on a daily basis. So I don't know. It's, yeah, again, weird, but not surprising.
Brian Hoyer coming back, Justin. That's one I actually don't mind.
Because
when you look at what this team is doing with this lack of offensive coordinator. I mean, Brian Hoyer now becomes the only continuity that this franchise has. I hope they bring in another quarterback or draft a mid-round quarterback in case Mac Jones gets hurt. I hope we never have to see Brian Hoyer actually play. We were lucky we didn't have to see him last year ever. But I do feel like, look, he's giving some continuity and guidance to Mac Jones. I almost wish they brought him back as a coach, not as a quarterback.
So that's exactly what I was going to say. Why are we, you know, why are we wasting a roster spot in beating around the bush here? Why don't we just bring him back as some sort of assistant coach, quarterback's coach, whatever? I mean, he's only here to be a player coach. Like, he's not here because, you know, if Mac goes down, Hoyer's going to step in and you're not going to skip a beat. I think it's weird for me. Get free up a roster spot. Bring him back as a coach. I don't get it.
Yeah, totally. And bring in a legitimate backup quarterback in case Mac Jones gets hurt. Because, I mean, the way they blocked for Mac last year, especially in that first half of the year, they are damn lucky that he didn't get hurt at some point. The guy's as tough as nails. I mean, I think Jones is tough. I think we saw that this year, that this guy can take a beating. I think back to that hit he took against the Cowboys. Yeah. I think it was it Randy Gregory that, like, absolutely clocked him?
Yeah.
There was a lot of that this season. And you know, you may end up seeing your backup quarterback at some point. In my mind, they really don't have a legitimate backup quarterback right now. I don't consider Brian Hoyer to be that. I consider him to be a coach on the field. I'm glad that they have him. I'd like it better if he was actually a real coach and they brought in a legit second quarterback. Justin, what are the big needs the Patriots have in the offseason, in my opinion? If you look at their backfield, they got great running backs, Damien Harris, Ramondre Stevenson. They got no one that can catch the damn football. They relied on Brandon Bolden. You talk about a career special teams guy. Brandon Bolden's not a third down back. Okay, let's just get that out of our head. We know we made a play here and there. You know, it's the NFL. It's 2021. Guys are running up and down the field. The rules favor offenses. Anyone you put out there, okay, is going to make a play here or there. Brandon Bolden is not a pass-catching back. Brandon Bolden is not a third down back. He's not what you need as a threat to make plays. You need a Darren Sproles. You need a small scat quick back, a Danny Woodhead, someone like that that can catch balls on third down, get yards, make plays. Patriots had James White last year. He was hurt. He's an unrestricted free agent this year. What do you think, Justin? Should the Patriots bring back James White?
I think they definitely should. I mean, I'm looking at him right now. He's still only 30 years old. I know that's old for a running back. But, you know, I think he's proved how reliable he is. And, you know, I know he's got the hip surgery and whatnot, but I'd like to see if he can get back to at least, you know, like 90, 95% of what he was, because I'll take a 95% James White on this team in the backfield. I will. So I'm going to be very curious to see what happens with him. But yeah, we definitely need that. I mean, look, it was almost, you know, we like to say we had depth in the backfield last year between guys like, what's his name? Stevenson and Harris and whatnot. But I mean, they were both, you know, runners. They were not, you know, sneaky receiving backs. They weren't really big dual threats. So yeah, you need someone like James White. And one of the best parts about James White was he was a receiving back that could also run the ball. How many times did we fool defenses on third downs, you know, giving it James White up the middle and a little draw play, stuff like that. It adds an element to the offense that, you know, the defense has to prepare for.
Yeah. And you know, if you look at Mac Jones's skill set, and I think very similar to Brady, you know, having a guy that can, you know, you're going to execute, you're going to run screens, you're going to run an offense. You need guys like James White to be there to make plays, and Mac's ability to throw accurate on short routes and set guys up for run after catch plays. Guys like James White will thrive with a quarterback like that. They need someone like that. Now, I don't know if they should bring back James White for the reason you just said. He's going to be 30 years old. He's coming off a big injury. I think what they need to do is go out and find the next James White. If they bring back White, I won't be upset as long as it's at the right number. But for all his sweet feet and his ability to be a good scat back, he's not really a burner. I still feel like they need a lot more speed on offense.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, that's out there. I'm not looking at the track right now, but there are definitely some of those guys out there available. And one guy that I think they should have gone after last year was Gio Bernard, given what was going on with James White. So yeah, I definitely think someone like that archetype is needed back in New England in that backfield.
Justin, the Patriots lost a starter in free agency besides J.C. Jackson today, and that was Ted Karras, who really brought some stability to the middle of their line. Because for whatever reason, Michael Owenui, whether he was hurt or whatever it was, took a bit of a step back this year. I love the Bengals signing Karras because he's not a great player, but he's a solid guard. Yeah. And he's an upgrade for them for a team that really lost the Super Bowl because of the middle of their interior line.
Yeah.
The Patriots, instead of bringing back Karras, re-signed James Ferentz. What do you think about that little switch there? Because I actually think that was a well played by the Patriots. I don't think the difference between Ferentz and Karras is all that much. And I think you can bring in someone. You hope Owenui recovers from whatever was bothering him last year, and you draft someone and you try to develop the next guy. I was kind of, as much as it stings to lose a starter, that one didn't bother me as much because Ferentz isn't a bad player.
No, and I kind of agree. I just think you never know. You know, when depth goes on a line, it goes, right? The Patriots, we've even seen, the Patriots almost need that depth because they make so many adjustments with that O-line over, the first half of that season. The Patriots O-line, we talked about it when they weren't that good to start last year, and they ultimately, didn't have a great season. We talked about how that O-line typically gets better as the year goes on, right? So, I don't hate, like you said, I don't hate the move, but I do like having depth, and I, especially where you see, Trent Brown, he could be gone. He's a free agent. I can't imagine the Patriots, giving him a big contract. I just hope they have enough depth and enough pieces up there to keep Mac protected.
Absolutely. And it is concerning, and you allude to the tackle position. Isaiah Wynn, huge disappointment last year, really more of a liability than anything. Did not take steps, but he's on the team because they picked up their fifth year option. Trent Brown will not be back. I mean, this is what I say when I say, look, the Patriots have a bottom 10 roster. I mean, where is the stability? I mean, their offensive line is like riddled with holes now. They've got no stable tackle on the roster. They just lost the starting guard. Shaq Mason and Owenui both had disappointing years last year. Dave Andrews has a bad neck. The receivers stink. They got no third down back. And they got holes at linebacker and cornerback, gaping holes. And really, the depth of the defensive line isn't great either. I mean, this is what I mean. I mean, this is a bottom 10 NFL roster. As we talk about all this stuff, it just really, to me, comes out. Justin, will Nelson Aguiar be on the Patriots in 2022?
I don't know, but if he is, I'll put it this way. If Aguilar's on the Patriots and he's our third, fourth, or fifth receiver, I won't be too disappointed. If he's our one or two, yeah, I'll be pretty upset.
Yeah, I think that – I don't think he'll be on the roster, and I hope he isn't on the roster. I think he really didn't feel like he really fit here. I don't know. Just really didn't do much. Didn't really feel like he brought it, which was kind of the wrap on him his whole career. I was really surprised when they signed him last year. Never really bought into it, and I would love to see them move on from him. But like you said, they got to bring in someone else because they got nothing there. There's no depth. What about N'Keal Harry, Justin? Is he going to be on the team in 2022?
I hope not. No, I he shouldn't be. I mean, I'd be interested to see who's willing to pick him up. I mean, he is a former first-round talent. Physically, he's fairly gifted. But I just think he's run his course in New England. I think we're done with him. I think he's done with us. I just don't see any benefit to bringing him back.
Do you think he has any value? I'd be shocked if someone traded for that guy. Shocked.
It's tough, man. Like, look, I kept wanting to give him the benefit of the doubt between his injury and then his inconsistency with a quarterback. I mean, he was injured with his last year with Tom Brady, and then he has Cam Newton, who sucked, and then he has a rookie in Mac Jones. So he has three quarterback changes in 3 years. One of them was god-awful, and one of them is rookie, right? And again, like I said, also dealing with injuries. So I looked for every chance to give him the benefit of the doubt, especially given the fact that he was a first-round talent. You know, he's six three, big body. But I can't give him the benefit of the doubt anymore. He's a liability out there. He doesn't have that football IQ that you typically look for in Patriot standouts. He just seems like someone we could easily replace and move on from.
He's got no instincts, Justin.
No instincts whatsoever.
Yeah. And we all play, and okay, what level of sports? We've all seen people that are better athletes, should be better athletes than they really are, or vice versa, because just mentally they don't process the game or the speed of the game well. And that's kind of where he is. And maybe that wasn't the case at college, but you step up to the pros, it's a faster game, it's a more intense physical game. And for whatever reason, you know, he is just totally, totally not able to really process the game and make plays at real time speed. And it's very apparent. So I would be so frustrated and disappointed if they bring this guy back for another year. It's abundantly clear he has no value, and I don't think he has any value to anyone else. I mean, I think at this point, 3 years, cut him and cut your ties.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more.
Let's look around the league, Justin. There's a couple guys who've been rumored to be available. You know, of course, for different prices. Some of them are free agents. Some of them are on teams who require a trade. I'm just going to throw a few names out there and give me a quick take on. Tell me what you think. Mm-hmm. Let's start in Carolina. Christian McCaffrey. There's been rumors that he's available. Wouldn't you think he'd be a great fit in New England?
I do, but I he's just been riddled with injuries the last couple years. I mean, you know, I just wonder.
Would you bring him in? Would you bring him in for a second round pick?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'd bring him in for a second round pick.
He's got a massive cap number, remember?
Well, I mean, Jesus, I feel like we can afford it, right? I mean, who are we really paying? Where's our money going?
Right. I think again, he's the kind of player. Like, I'm not a big into overpaying for running back, but if you could limit his touches and keep him healthy and manage him somehow, right? Mac's skill set and his skill set, I think, would line up really good.
100%, and kind of like we were talking about earlier, that need at running back for, you know, a dual threat back who's, you know, quick and shifty. That should be Christian McCaffrey. And when he's healthy, I mean, even last year when he was riddled with injuries, when he toughed it out and came back, you know, for those few games he played, he dominated.
Yep.
So, you know, I don't think it's in any way, shape, or form a fluke. I think this guy is the real deal. His talent is legit, and he's 100% a game changer. I'm just very skeptical given his injury history. But, you know, like you just said, if you can get him in here for the right price, he's definitely worth taking a flyer on.
Allen Robinson, Justin. He's a free agent.
Yeah.
You know, he's probably one of the top remaining free agents. He had a disappointing year last year in Chicago. That franchise, that team was kind of a disaster. Justin Fields did not look good. If you want to take for granted how good Mac Jones looked at times, you know, I mean, Justin Fields really looked like crap for most of the year. I mean, he had his moments here and there, but certainly I think his poor play affected Allen Robinson. Robinson's still available. He is older than some of the other a little bit. I think he's closer to 30. Any interest in him? You probably have to pay a big sum, a heavy contract to him.
So he's 28. I'm looking at him right now. Yeah. He's 28. And he's honestly, in my opinion, the most underrated receiver, or one of the most underrated receivers in all of the NFL. I think he's just gotten the absolute short end of the stick in every possible scenario, from being drafted into Jacksonville and having to, you know, start his career there, to then being traded to the dumpster fire of the Chicago Bears and having to deal with the whole mess of quarterbacks they've had. They had to deal with Mitchell Trubisky. I mean, this guy has just gone from loser organization to loser organization and played with loser quarterback to loser quarterback. So, and he's still put up some really good numbers. He's been pretty healthy, and you know, he's shown that he can be actually really dominant. I would love to give him a chance in New England. I think he's exactly what we need, not only from a talent standpoint, but from a physical skill set.
You know, I wouldn't mind them taking a flyer on him, to be honest with you. Like, if they were to, say, go out and sign Allen Robinson tomorrow, and they let J.C. Jackson walk, but they paid big money to bring in a top-level talent like Robinson, I'd kind of be okay with that. You know, I really would, because I feel like that would probably be a positive, a net positive for the franchise, you know?
It definitely would. It will be for now. But then when we lose a shootout 45-41 because we couldn't make a single defensive stop all game, then we're going to look back and we're going to go, Jesus Christ, what do we do?
Absolutely. That's true. Saquon Barkley, Justin, supposedly on the trade market. Do you have any interest in that guy at all? I think that guy sucks. I think he's so – that's a strong word. He's overrated, and right now there's like 40 guys in the NFL who could do what he can do. I'd rather go draft a few mid-round Ramondre Stevensons than pay a huge cap number and a draft pick for Saquon Barkley. I don't think he has a lot of value. I think he's super overrated. What's your take on Saquon Barkley? Any interest in bringing him to the Patriots? He's on the trade block.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he's an even bigger injury risk than Christian McCaffrey. At least with McCaffrey, and granted, obviously, while he was younger, when he had a little less mileage on him, but McCaffrey was at least able to show that he could be healthy, and you know, he could be impactful for an extended period of time, for full seasons. You know, his injuries are kind of just as of the last 2 years. And I know Barkley's going into what, only his fourth? Is it his fourth season in the NFL he's entering?
Yeah. So Barkley, fifth, I think.
Okay, yeah. So maybe, yeah, fourth or fifth. Maybe it's his fifth, but
it might even be more than that. Let me look it up. I mean, he's been around a while. Let me look it up.
I mean, he has, other than his rookie year, and even in his rookie year, I think he got banged up a little bit. He hasn't been healthy at all.
That's exactly right. I mean, the only year you're right. So he's entering his fifth year. Okay. And let me read you his in 2018, 261 carries, 1300 yards, 11 touchdowns, 91 catches. Okay. That was probably his best year. 217 touches, 1,000 yards, 6 touchdowns, 52 catches in 19. And then 20, he was hurt most of the year. Last year, he was hurt most of the year. You're getting a guy who had a great rookie year, or not even a great rookie year. I mean, let's be honest. We've seen guys have 11 touchdowns is good. It's not generational. I mean, this is the number one pick in the draft. We're told this is a generational talent. He's not. I mean, he's a good player. He had his moments. He's on the downswing of his career already. You look at the Dallas Cowboys being totally hamstrung by that Ezekiel Elliott contract, which at the time I think everyone knew was a huge mistake. Elliott had a terrific rookie year. It's been nothing but downhill from him since then. He's an above average back right now. Barkley is absolutely on the same course. It would be such a huge mistake. I can see why the Giants would want to get rid of him. They're stuck with him. I wouldn't trade him for a used bag of balls if it's going to bring me that contract. I think he's got a pretty heavy cap number.
Yeah, I know. I don't want Saquon Barkley at all. He's one of those guys that, I mean, look, his, you know, when he first came into the league as a rookie, you know, both, you know, prior to that rookie season and during the rookie season, I think he definitely opened some eyes. I think people were friggin' more obsessed with the size of his quads than his actual talent. You know what I mean? So I don't know. It was just one of those things where I think he was a little bit overhyped, and he's definitely not living up to it. And you know, again, if you can't even stay healthy, you know, enough to that you can be on the fields and you can at least try to prove it, then I don't know how much I'm willing to invest into you.
I mean, his contract, I just looked it up. His contract isn't terrible, but it's like $8 million this year. And it's like, if you're asking me, would I rather bring in like a take a chance on a third round back or a fourth round back, or would I rather take a chance on Saquon Barkley at $8 million a year? Like, I'll take my chances in the draft. I'll take my chances that I'm going to hit on the next Alvin Kamara, or, you know, or even a Ramondre Stevenson, someone decent.
Then
pay for this guy.
I agree, but by the same token, I'll take Saquon Barkley for $8 million as opposed to Devin McCourty for $9 million.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Take your chances. Yeah, I mean, that's fair. Totally. Robbie Anderson, Justin, he's been linked to the Patriots, receiver, Carolina, didn't have a great year. Again, bad quarterback. I always kind of liked the player. I think he'd fill a role here. I think they need pro caliber receivers. And if you're asking me right now, I would cut ties with Jacoby Myers in a hot second if it meant bringing in Robbie Anderson. Robbie Anderson's a pro. I mean, Jacoby Myers is a borderline pro.
So I have mixed feelings about Robbie Anderson. I have mixed feelings, A, about, and again, I'm not the most knowledgeable in the world about Robbie Anderson, but I have a little bit of mixed feelings about his attitude in general. I just don't think, from what I've heard, you know, he's the most committed. I don't think he's the hardest worker. The other thing too is he's almost like he's like a step up Nelson Aguilar. He's a guy who stretches the field. He's kind of a burner. You know, he wants the deep ball. He's almost like a young DeSean Jackson. That doesn't really play into Mac's strong suits like that. I feel like we need to find like our next Edelman. We need what they wanted Jacoby Myers to be, that reliable every down guy, the guy who can, you know, get to the sticks. He can move the chains. He can make that tough catch over the middle, take a hit. I don't think that's Robbie Anderson. Like I don't know what problem he solves. And to be completely honest, I'd probably rather keep Aguilar and pay him whatever it is than bring in Robbie Anderson and probably pay him double what you'd have to pay Aguilar.
How about Juju Smith-Schuster, Justin? You talk about the next Edelman. Schuster is a great slot player when healthy. Obviously coming off injuries, two of the last 3 years been hurt. Would you take a flyer on a guy like Schuster? I feel like you talk about a guy whose skill set would line up with what the Patriots try to do and with what Mac Jones is good at. And I don't agree that I do think Mac Jones is underrated throwing the deep ball. I think he throws the deep ball better than people give him credit for. I think the problem is the Patriots receivers are terrible. That's my and their line play was spotty. That's my personal two cents. We can agree to disagree, but Schuster, I think, is everything, if he's healthy, that this franchise needs. Obviously he's coming off a big injury last year. Would you take a flyer on Juju Smith-Schuster?
Yeah, I'd probably take a flyer on him. I'd rather bring him in way before we brought Robbie Anderson in. I really would. I mean, look, he's the one thing I would really want to know with Juju Smith-Schuster, though, is, you know, is he going to buy into Belichick and the Patriots' way? I mean, you know, with the Patriots, you're not at midfield TikToking before games, right? You're not, you know.
Right.
So he's almost, you know, I like Smith-Schuster on the field. I wonder if his off-the-field antics and personality would be a conflicting issue for him in New England. I don't know, but I would definitely take a flyer on him.
All right, I'm going to bring up three names that are not coming to New England because they various reasons. They either signed someone else or they've been suspended. Yep. Let's start with Calvin Ridley. What is your take, Justin, on the NFL's heavy-handed punishment of Calvin Ridley? I thought, first of all, just from an on-the-field perspective, it was a big loss for the Patriots because even if Ridley doesn't come to Foxborough, it's a domino effect. He was going to be moved out of Atlanta this year. He goes to Cleveland, then maybe you get Amari Cooper. He goes to wherever, you get this player. Right. Like, it was just one less top-level guy. It shifted the whole market down. Right. So I thought it was a bad thing for the Patriots one way or the other. I'm not surprised the league punished him the way they did. In fact, I think it was appropriate. The sanctity of the game, you can't challenge that if you're a player. So, you know, everyone knows that if you're a player, you're not supposed to bet on sports. I mean, this is what got Pete Rose banned, Shoeless Joe Jackson. I mean, it's lunacy to think you could get away with that, especially in today's world where there is like a clear paper trail. And Calvin Ridley did the one cardinal sin that you're not supposed to do. And even though it was only a $1,500 bet, if that's true, because we don't know if it is, but if that's true, I mean, I'm sorry. You have to come down with a hammer on this guy because you can't, especially now as the NFL is traipsing into legal gambling and getting into bed with gambling, you have to keep that wall in place. What happens on the field can't be affected by the gaming.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think Calvin Ridley is a classic case of making an example out of somebody to set the tone.
That's right. They made an example out of him.
They made an example out of him, and I don't, for the reasons you just named, I don't hate it. Like, look, We all know when sports gambling was illegal, federally, how big of an issue it was, not only for, sometimes with athletes, but even just people in general. You know, sports betting was still here. And now it's legal. Now it's, people in almost half of the states have access to it. It's super easy to do. And it's like you said, it's becoming a very integral part of not only watching sports, but being a fan of sports. Even on broadcast now, you turn on broadcast and they're broadcasting, live lines, overs, unders, spreads, during games. It's something that as it trickles into society, and I shouldn't even say trickle because it's actually getting poured into society right now. You really got to make sure you don't lose the integrity of the sport. And I think it would just be so easy to do that. So easy to do that.
Growing up in the 90s, Justin, like, let me tell you how many times you would hear, you can't have a pro franchise in Vegas. Yeah. It'll never happen because gambling is too much gambling, and now what there's two already, and there'll probably be more before we know it. I mean, all these lines, these imaginary lines that always existed for so long, the walls are all coming down, the lines are all being erased, but there's that one sacred place you just can't go. And I don't think, did Calvin really deserve a year suspension for a $1,500 bet? If no. That's indeed all it was, of course not. But at the same time, the NFL had to do that because if you let this inch happen, someone else will try to take a mile. And you had to let these guys know that if they dare traipse into that world, they will absolutely have their head lopped off because it is just completely dangerous and unacceptable to the very sanctity of the product. And if people stop buying into the credibility and on the field product, I'm sorry, then the league is screwed. And that's when people will stop watching. Let's talk about Amari Cooper, Justin, traded to the Cleveland Browns this week. Look, I like the player, but that cap number is absolutely insane. Only a fifth round pick for a solid wide receiver, a guy that I think going into last year, we would have considered a number one wide receiver. Would you, as the Patriots, Justin, have put up the fifth round pick for Amari Cooper? I don't think, would it be even an option with that cap number?
He would have been a great Patriot. I mean, he's definitely someone that I think you need. He's a good route runner. He's a classic professional. He's a talented receiver. It would have been a big cap number, but if we're talking about the Patriots, I just have to say, what are we saving the money for? When we find young studs that we either trade for or draft and, they're homegrown, we let them go. We let them go. We don't pay players the money that we don't even pay the greatest of all time what he wants to be paid, right? So, like, what are we saving this money for? That to me is kind of an issue.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think at $25 million, you can say the cap is crap, and I kind of agree with that. And like we said earlier, you look at the Rams, the Bucks, all these other teams, they're not hamstrung. The Jaguars sign bad contracts. It feels like every year they're still spending money more and more. I don't know what they're doing, but they spend it. I get it. I totally believe in it. Like we talked about earlier, when we were talking about Belichick, but when you're talking $25 million for a guy that I think caught 58 passes last year, I think there is some limitations to what you can do with the cap at some point. And Cooper caught 68 passes, 865 yards, and 8 touchdowns last year. In today's NFL, those are good but not great numbers. I'm okay with passing on that player at that number, even though he was gotten for a bargain basement price. Because of that, personally, I'd rather the Patriots take a shot on Jarvis Landry, who was cut today, and bring him in at a good contract than go pay a fortune for Amari Cooper, who seems to be on the decline a little bit.
Yeah. Again, I'm not super disappointed we didn't get Amari Cooper. Look, if there are like on the field reasons why you don't want Amari Cooper, then I'll totally sit here and listen and agree. But I'm done hearing an excuse for the Patriots, I personally, when it comes to cap hit and you know, their contract, I can't hear it anymore. I can't listen to how these guys are too expensive and not see our money get spent, you know, on players that deserve it. So if we want to talk about, you know, players being bad fits, not being talented enough, having questionable off the field, whatever, you name it, I'm cool with it. But I'm done with the salary cap, or, you know, the cap hit as an excuse with these Patriots. I can't let them use that anymore. I'm just, you know, again, I keep saying it, but where's the money going? Eventually it's got to go somewhere. So, hey.
We talked a lot about a lot of stuff already, but what we didn't talk about yet, Justin, was the story of the week last week. I think we have to change gears a little bit before we wrap up in a few minutes and talk about Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson last week. I mean, this whole little movement in the NFC was crazy. First things first, Denver's move on Russell Wilson. I am a huge Russell Wilson fan. You know that. I've said he's my favorite Patriot, my favorite non-Patriot player. He's a terrific leader, terrific person, excellent quarterback. He has that it factor. However, I have noticed the last 2 years that his play is in decline a little bit, and I don't think he's quite the same player. The Seattle Seahawks aren't stupid. They're not trading away Russell Wilson at 32 for a couple first-round picks if he was still the Russell Wilson of 5 years ago. They must see something in his game that makes them believe that he is on the decline. I don't think it was a bad move for Denver, but I'm not sure if it's going to bring the long-term solution to the Broncos that they hope for. I see Russell Wilson as a player, unfortunately, on the decline, because I'm a huge fan of his and I always loved his game. I see this as maybe working for a year or two. I don't think the Broncos ever win a Super Bowl with Russell Wilson. They may win 10 or 11 games this year. I think it'll go down from there. What did you think, Justin, of the move for Russell Wilson? I mean, for what they paid for him and what they gave up, I don't think it was a great move.
So I do agree that the Broncos really gave up a lot. Like, I definitely think they maybe overpaid a little bit. Like, even in terms of, like, the players, like, I think they probably could have gotten away with the picks. I don't think they had to give up guys like Noah Fant or Shelby Harris. You know, that obviously hurts. But I will say this. I look at the situation in Denver, and it's eerily similar to, what was it, 2015, when they brought in an aged, past his prime, you know, beaten down Peyton Manning. And he revived his career in that offense. They were very successful. They won a Super Bowl. And I feel like they're building, or they have built, the same type of team over there. They have a bunch of skill players, right? If you look at between that backfield, those wide receivers, they have some very talented guys on defense, you know, some great young pass rushers and coverage guys. You know, you look at guys like Bradley Chubb, you know, he's like a young Von Miller. Guys like Patrick Surtain, you know, they have some really, what's his name, Simmons, their other cornerback, Justin Simmons. They have some really, really good pieces. And that was one team that I thought was a quarterback away from being a Super Bowl contender. And I would way rather take Russell Wilson in his current state than the condition that they took Peyton Manning in back in 2015. So I see it being two very similar situations. And given the success they had in 2015 with Peyton, I don't doubt that maybe they could put something together in Denver over the next couple of years. It's obviously going to be very tough just looking at the division they're in, which for the foreseeable future is going to be one of the toughest divisions the NFL has, I think, seen maybe ever, let alone like the last, you know, couple years. And the AFC in general is obviously going to be very tough. So yeah, that they definitely have an uphill battle just to get out of their division. But I think that's a talented team. And I think Russell Wilson is a better option than to 2015 Peyton, and I think the rest of the
team are the Broncos Super Bowl contenders right now, Justin.
Yeah, I'm going to say yeah. I really am. I'm going to say yeah. But again, it's in theory. When you look at the talent that's in their division, and you look at the rest of the AFC, it's obviously going to be very, very difficult. But I give them just as a chance to compete as anybody.
I think all they really did here, I mean, I don't disagree with you for 2022. Like, I think they'll be very good this year because they have a lot of talent on both sides of the ball, and Wilson will come in and will be good. But I'm sorry, if Russell Wilson wasn't on the decline, he's still a relatively young quarterback. They're not trading him out of Seattle. Like, I just felt like, call me crazy, I saw it, lost a step. You know, athleticism was a huge part of his game. I don't know. I just think long term, I don't think this ever turns into a Super Bowl. I know it's a copycat league. The Rams just went all in on Matt Stafford. Now the Broncos are going to go all in on Russell Wilson. Everyone assumes it's going to work because it worked for the Rams. I'm not convinced. I think I will say this. Their best chance to win a Super Bowl, I think, will be this year. Because I think Wilson will decline and they have all the talent around him right now. What's your take on Aaron Rodgers staying in Green Bay, Justin? That cap number, if it's true, and it's disputed, but if it's true, Aaron Rodgers at $50 million is a pretty steep nut, even for one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play. What this tells me, okay, is that Jordan Love must be really bad.
100%.
Jordan Love must be awful. They just drafted a quarterback in the first round 2 years ago. You took Jordan Love so that you could move on from Aaron Rodgers. And now what happens? Jordan Love sucks so bad that Rodgers has you over a barrel so that when he starts talking about leaving, you have to pony up $50 million to get him to stay. I think that's going to be – if that number is accurate – I don't see how. I know the cap is crap. I'm with you, Justin. I'm tired of hearing about the cap, the game, but $50 million, that is insane.
Yeah, it's definitely insane. But maybe the Packers are looking. First off, yeah, you're 100% right about Jordan Love, right? He's obviously awful. And you almost wonder whether, you know, I almost look at it as like hush money. Like it's almost better to give Aaron Rodgers that type of ridiculous contract than to admit that they effed up with Jordan Love, or that they, you know, that he's going to be the future of this franchise. Like Jordan Love, every time he's gotten the chance, has played very poorly, including the one game he got to start against Kansas City. He's clearly not the future. He's clearly not even, you know, potentially a good NFL quarterback by any standards. I think it's even just obvious to us as fans watching him even in preseason games that this guy, you know, isn't super talented. So it's almost like it's easier to pay Aaron Rodgers and keep him in town and keep the hype wagon going around the Packers than it is to admit that they absolutely just completely fumbled that first round pick.
This, because, you know, everyone said that, oh, Jordan Love has so much talent. I thought it was a terrible draft pick at the time. And what I would say to everyone, you know, you hear for everyone, Josh Allen, for everyone, Patrick Mahomes, right? Well, you take that super talented guy and he turns into a top player. There's like 5 or 10 Jordan Loves, Mitchell Trubisky's, like these guys, these super talented guys that really didn't perform in college. Well, Mahomes certainly performed in college, but Allen really didn't. You know, when you take a chance on a guy like that, you may end up with Josh Allen, but five times to one, you're going to end up with Jordan Love or something like that. And that's where the Packers are now. And I think, you know, do I like what I've seen from Jordan Love? No, I don't. But you know what? I can tell you right now, the Packers definitely don't like what they've seen from Jordan Love, because they would never, ever have let themselves get into a $50 million contract with a head case, okay, 38-year-old quarterback that they drafted this guy to replace if they felt like they had any inkling at all that Jordan Love could even be a good NFL quarterback. There's no way they would have done that.
No, and now too, Davante Adams is now saying that he refuses to play under the franchise tag, so he's looking for a new contract. So after you pay that type of money to Aaron Rodgers, and if you're able to work something out with Davante Adams, what type of money do you have left to keep that roster intact?
Now you're throwing to seventh round picks. I mean, Rodgers has made a career like Brady of getting the best out of the people around him. I mean, look how many guys have had their career made by Rodgers, got, you know, no name guys. But I mean, at some point, you know, it's too much. And when you have the potential to lose a Davante Adams, you know, how are you going to pay Davante Adams 20, $50 million a year and Aaron Rodgers $50 million a year. I mean, I'm no capologist, and I totally get that the cap is BS in many ways, but that does seem like, okay, maybe there is some limit to what can be done. But you know, I think it will be very interesting to see if Green Bay can continue to be a contending caliber team because of this contract and what happens if the talent starts to erode there. They may never get closer to a Super Bowl than they've been the last 2 years.
Yeah, very true. And also, too, just to look at that division, your biggest threat right now is the Vikings. And that's not a team or an organization that I'm threatened by right now. So, you know, look, they might have, you know, in one of those superficial seasons where, you know, they finish 11 and 6, 12 and 5 or something like that. And win their division, and stack up 5 or 6 wins against their division. I don't know. I don't think they're going to be equipped, to beat another powerhouse team. I really don't.
Win in the postseason, right?
Right, I don't think so.
Really don't. All right, let's talk. I got a few more names I want to bring up, guys around the league. Then we're going to wrap it up with one final question about the Pats. Jimmy G, what's going on with Jimmy G? And he, coming off a shoulder surgery, the guy can't stay healthy. He does win when he's in there. Where is Jimmy G going to end up? Where's the right fit for Garoppolo? I think we can both agree, or maybe you or do we agree, he's probably not going to be in San Francisco next year.
No, I don't think he'll be in San Francisco. What I can't imagine is, you know, if you're a team like a Pittsburgh, why would you rather Mitchell Trubisky over someone like a Jimmy Garoppolo, right? Like, I think there are definitely a couple teams that Jimmy G could slot into.
And he would thrive. Like, how about, I'll give you an even better fit than Pittsburgh, Indianapolis.
He'd be great in Indy.
And they got a good offensive line, so they can protect him. The one thing I'll say, you know, honestly, I want Jimmy G to get traded, and it's for purely selfish reasons, because I think it's going to be great if Trey Lance is the starting quarterback for the Niners this year. And I'm going to tell you something. I'll be rooting for him to crash and burn. I don't know why, but I just hate that pick. And I don't know, maybe it's a little bit of, because I'm a Patriots fan, and we got Mac Jones, and I'm, you know, and I would love Mac Jones at 15 to be a better player than Trey Lance at 3, where San Francisco passed on Jones. That might be a little bit of that, but maybe I still feel a little bit of an affiliation to Garoppolo because he was here and I still kind of root for him. He kind of got a raw deal in San Fran in some ways. I will be rooting against Trey Lance. I want to see him play, though, because it will be interesting if Lance – it will be so much more interesting if Lance is a starting quarterback for the Niners than Jimmy G is.
Yeah, 100%. And I will say one more thing about Jimmy G before we move on from him is that, you know, there seems to be players in the NFL that, you know, and not just in the NFL, but just sometimes in athletics, sometimes in life in general, sometimes, you know, you work hard, you do everything right, and you just come up on, you know, the short end of the stick in terms of, you know, accomplishments and success. Jimmy G seems to be the opposite, where, you know, we've talked about this, how his team sometimes seems to win despite him. He seems to be the beneficiary of just some crazy luck where, you know, he might almost be a little bit overinflated in terms of his value. I really think he's lucked himself into some of his stats and some of his, you know, winning records. And I just don't know if...
Well, Justin, I've been saying that for years. I think you could say that going all the way back to the Patriots.
Right, like, exactly.
You know, people were expecting to get like 3 first-round picks for this guy. He played 6 quarters. He looked good. But he got hurt. He played against Miami and who was the second game? I forget.
Arizona
or Miami. 2 lousy teams. He looked really good in those 6 quarters. And then he got hurt, though. And it's like people – you think teams are going to give up 2 first-round picks or even 1 first-round pick for this guy? I'm telling you, and we talked about this a few episodes ago, Jimmy G getting – a second-round pick for Jimmy G was actually fair market value for what he was. And I think NFL GMs kind of knew that at the time, which is why maybe the market for him wasn't as robust as our all these biased, you know, self-involved New England fans think it was. These are the same people that told us we should have been getting a second-round pick for Ryan Mallett a few years ago, and he ended up flaming out of the league and never played anywhere. So I don't think Jimmy G does have the value maybe on the market for whatever reason. I personally like the player. I think he's a good player, but I don't think other GMs share that opinion, because when it really comes down to brass nuts, it seems like teams aren't really willing to put up a lot to get this guy into their program.
Yeah, no, for sure. But again, I agree with all that. I'm just looking around at some of the moves that have already been made, looking at guys like Carson Wentz getting signed, right off the bat.
Well, that was my next one.
All right, let's
move on to Carson Wentz.
Yeah, let's get into that. That talented
traded
loser.
Traded for a used bag of balls, right?
Oh, like, my God. Like this,
I mean, but again, this is the same phenomenon. Like, I look at Wentz, and I mean, his numbers were good last year. I'm no scout. You know, a guy throws 27 touchdowns and 7 picks. I think that's damn good quarterback play, even in 2022 with all the stats inflated. He gets absolutely no respect. Indy couldn't get rid of him fast enough. You know, Washington brings him in. I don't know. Washington has a history of poor decision-making at the quarterback position. You tell me, Justin, is this a good move for the Commanders?
I think it's an awful move, honestly. I really do. Like, I think it's honestly just adding another clown to the show, like, at this point over in Washington. The thing that really bugs me with Carson Wentz is that he does enough to make people think that he keeps deserving chances. But in reality, I think we all know Carson Wentz's ceiling. And his ceiling is maybe taking you to the playoffs. And if you're lucky, you could maybe win a game. He is not Mr. Ice in his veins. He's not Mr. Rise to the Occasion and the Big Moment. He is not Mr. Command Respect and Dominate a Game. Like, he makes big mistake after big mistake when it counts the most. There was a rumor, LeGarrette Blount, former Patriot, but former Eagle in that 2017 championship team. He told a little story in a podcast the other day where Darren Sproles actually had to be physically restrained from attacking Carson Wentz during that 2017 playoff run, because during it, after Wentz got injured, he expressed his displeasure to the other injured players that the Eagles were succeeding without him. That's just the type of guy I feel like he is, man. Like, I feel like he has a ceiling, and he's talented enough that he keeps giving off this illusion that he's a good starting quarterback of the NFL.
Maybe he is. Look at some of the things that maybe he is a good quarterback, but maybe he's just a loser. Maybe he's a good quarterback.
That's what I call him. I call him a talented loser. That's my exact term for him, a talented loser.
And you said something else. He comes up small when it counts. Yes. And I think that's true. And he makes big mistakes when it counts. And he might be one of these players, and we've all seen these types of players many times.
Yes.
It's just when the stakes are highest, he comes up smallest. And he's really not a big game player. Doesn't mean he's a bad player. He's a flawed player. Right. And the flaw is really above the neck. And that might be the case with Carson Wentz, because you look at the production and you look at the stats. I mean, again, a guy that throws a 4-to-1 touchdown interception ratio, that's a good quarterback. I'm sorry, but yet for somehow the Colts couldn't get him out of town fast enough, and I think that's really telling. Let's move on to another quarterback, Justin, that I think has put up really great numbers over the last 6 or 7 years and just got a big contract and gets absolutely no respect. Kirk Cousins, I think, is underrated. I really do. He's not Tom Brady. He's not Breeze. He's not, Aaron Rodgers. But I don't think he's absolute trash either. And if you listen to the way people talk about this guy, they talk about him like he's garbage quarterback. His production the last 6 years has been near the top of the league in terms of touchdown passes, quarterback rating, you know, other things. I know with him, too, you can make an argument. He comes up small when the moments are biggest.
Right.
Totally get that. But what do you think about the Vikings going all in on another year of Kirk Cousins?
I like Kirk Cousins. I like him, like, as a player. I loved kind of watching, you know, a young Kirk Cousins kind of make his bones in Washington. You know, some of those famous clips of him, you know, yelling at the camera and whatnot.
Yeah.
Getting all fired up after he burst onto the scene. I was rooting for him. I really was. And then he obviously played himself into a big contract in Minnesota. He's been there for a while. But again, it's another one of those situations where, don't get me wrong, I'll take him way before I take someone like Carson Wentz. But he's almost like the creme de la creme of talented losers. Like, he's very talented, but are you going to win a Super Bowl with Kirk Cousins? Is he going to drive, you know, down the field in the NFC Championship with, you know, with 2 minutes left and you're down 4 points and punch it in the end zone? That's not the guy I want doing that. So I think he's like as borderline as it gets between being like a franchise quarterback and being another talented loser. I really hope he proves me wrong. I would actually love to see the Vikings kind of have a big 2022 season. And after Aaron Rodgers signs this big deal, seeing them, you know, lose the divisions, I'd love to see the Vikings come out and win the NFC North this year. But I just don't have that type of hope for Kirk Cousins.
And then last one, Justin, you mentioned him already. Mitchell Trubisky signing with Pittsburgh Steelers today. Are the Pittsburgh Steelers really going to have Mitchell Trubisky as their starting quarterback? I got to say that as much as I don't like Trubisky as a player, I don't totally hate the move because who else is going to play in Pittsburgh? They got nothing else. They're not going to play Mason Rudolph. He's not fit for the job. You got a guy that does have some physical talent. I mean, Trubisky had a good year in Chicago a few years ago. I mean, I think he's a soft player. I think he's a mentally and emotionally weak player. And I think he is, you know, whatever tenacity or it factor or ferociousness a player needs to have to be successful in the NFL, Mitchell Trubisky has the opposite. Like, he's just a soft, weak player. But that said, a talented player, who knows? Maybe he matures. Maybe he got better in Buffalo. Maybe being benched and forced out of Chicago would be a life-changing experience. I mean, these guys are still young guys. You know, maybe he takes a step and redeems himself. It's happened before. I don't hate the move for Pittsburgh, and I think they'll draft a quarterback as well.
So I got to be honest, I kind of do hate the move. I do. I'm not a fan of Mitchell Trubisky. I think, kind of like you said, he's just absolutely, you know, mentally I don't know. Mentally weak, is that the term for it? He just doesn't strike me as
mentally weak. That's exactly right.
Tough and resilient. You know what I mean? He doesn't strike me as a leader. He doesn't strike me as the guy who walks into the locker room and commands respect. I'm still not even sold on his actual talent as a starting NFL quarterback. And again, when I just look at some of the other quarterbacks that I would much rather over Mitchell Trubisky, and even as much crap as I just talked about Carson Wentz, I would still rather Carson Wentz over Mitchell Trubisky, my personal preference.
Yeah, of course.
You know what I mean? But when I look at...
Not even a debate.
Right.
I'm just saying Pittsburgh's got to roll the dice here because look, this is a bridge year for them.
No, you do got to roll the dice, but I'm just saying if I'm Pittsburgh and I see guys like Jimmy G out there, people aren't talking about Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson, all those charges just got dropped. He should be clear to play in the 2022 NFL season. I mean, that would be a hell of a landing spot.
Yeah, but you know what, Justin? There is no way the Texans are trading Watson to an AFC team. Like, he's going NFC one way or the other. He's going to go to New Orleans or Carolina.
Yeah, and
no way he's trading.
No, and you know that's the, you know they probably that probably is the case. I guess the larger point is just that there were a lot of other quarterbacks that I would have rather bring in to try to bridge the gap before I signed Mitch Trubisky.
Absolutely. Okay, and then let's talk one more. So before we move on, do you think Pittsburgh will be better or worse this year than they were last year with Trubisky's quarterback? Because Roethlisberger was trash last year.
Roethlisberger was trash, but he was a different trash, right? Like, Roethlisberger was trash in the sense that he wasn't necessarily making all the plays and throws that he should, and he was kind of a step slow. But he wasn't going out there and constantly turning the ball over and constantly losing the game, right? Like, and having absolutely no control. Like, Mitchell Trubisky will go out there and fumble it literally by fumbling it and throwing interceptions. Like, that's the way Mitchell Trubisky will lose you the game. So I agree. Ben wasn't the greatest, but I actually think Mitch will be way
better. Yeah, it comes down to the age old question. Would you rather a has been or a never was? Right?
Exactly.
And I think I'd take the has been. I really do.
100%. Especially when you look at the fact that, like, Pittsburgh, you know, I know they got Najee Harris. I know they have some decent talent at wide receiver, but, like, you know, let's address the fact that O-line is kind of crappy, and they haven't done anything to make it any better. And what was one of the big problems with Mitch Trubisky when he was at Chicago? He couldn't stay on his feet. So, you know, I think it's going to be tough to put him in a situation like that, especially when within your division you have high-flying offenses like the Bengals, like the Ravens, like the Browns. You're going to – and you're just in the AFC, so you're going to be playing some other really good teams. Like, you're going to have to put up points if you're the Steelers this year in 2022. Yeah. And I don't know if Mitchell Trubisky can do that.
When I saw the move today, the first – one of the first things I thought of, Justin, was just the Patriots signing Cam Newton. And like this is just a placeholder, right? Like you're bringing in Trubisky to take the lumps until you figure out what the real long term plan is. This is very similar to what the Patriots did with Newton 2 years ago. And as soon as Pittsburgh drafts and develops someone that even has an inkling of a prayer of being the next guy, Trubisky will be on the bench. But like I said, I don't hate the move because you know maybe they get lucky. You know, I don't know, but they're desperate. They're desperate. They're at a crossroads with Roethlisberger retiring. All right, well, let's tie it back to the Patriots, Justin, and then we're going to wrap it up. One more question for you. We're one day into free agency. We still have a draft ahead of us. We have a lot of free agency ahead of us. But as of today, March 14, 2022, are the Patriots closer to the top or the bottom of the AFC right now?
Oh, I don't even think it's a question. They're closer to the bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hate to say that, especially, and it seems weird to say that, too, after they were a playoff team last year, and you'd like to think they would continue that rebuild and head in the right trajectory, but I think the Patriots are a real regression candidate this year. I really think they are. And I think, you know, Buffalo, they could definitely take a step back, but they're not going away. That's still a decent team. That's a tough team. Josh Allen's always going to be a tough matchup. And Miami's only beefing themselves up and getting a little better, right? Who knows? Maybe even the Jets in their second year under Saleh. Maybe they even put a couple pieces together and make it competitive.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because I think the Dolphins are going to take a big step back this year. I don't like the coach they brought in. I don't like Tua. I think Flores was the best thing that franchise had going for them. Stunned they got rid of him. Shows how what a mismanaged, crappy organization they are. He was all they had. Tua, I don't think is going to amount to much as an NFL quarterback. I suspect this might be his last year as a starter. Really haven't been impressed with anything. So I think the Dolphins step back. The Bills aren't going anywhere. And the Jets, Justin, very quietly played a lot better as the year went on last year. They beat the Bengals. Don't forget.
They did.
They had a couple other competitive games towards the end of the year. Zach Wilson very quietly made some progress. He's nowhere near what Mac Jones did but last year. But he made some progress. To me, Justin, and this is just my two cents, you may agree, you may disagree with this, the Patriots are a bottom 10 roster who hit on a good quarterback in the draft. Now, I don't know if Jones will be a great quarterback. Now, that's going to remain to be seen. But I think people have grossly underrated what Mac Jones did and how good a player he is. I think they grossly underrate his physical talent, his ability to throw the ball. I mean, he has a lot more talent than people are giving him credit for. And I think last year, with good coaching and really good quarterback play for much of the year, this team took a bottom 10 roster into the playoffs. I still think they're a bottom 10 roster. I think they were a bottom 10 roster in 2020. I think they're maybe a bottom 3 roster in 2020. I think they made some steps last year. You know, we're still not sure where they're going to be. There's still too much free agency left for 2022. It hasn't got off to a good start. And the roster in 2022 may be worse on paper than the roster from 2021 when it's all said and done. It doesn't mean they're going to be a worse team. You know, who knows what's going to happen? Players may progress. There'll be surprises, whatever, one way or the other. Bottom line is this team still has holes up and down the roster. And I think the only way right now that I see them being a playoff caliber contending team is if Mac Jones makes a huge leap from year 1 to 2. I mean, and I think that's a lot to put on a guy with this kind of talent around him, lack of great skill position talent right now, and the flux in the coaching staff, it's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot. And again,
but that's their only hope right now. Their only hope.
It is their only hope. And it's discouraging that we're sitting here talking about their only hope, and yet they haven't gotten better since the season ended, right? They're getting worse It's so it seems for the time being. You know, if you potentially, you know, like we said, Trent Brown's probably gone. J.C. Jackson is gone. You know, those are probably, I would say, two of the two most important free agents that we had, and they were probably the most two important. I would argue maybe two of the most important, you know, other than maybe someone like Judon, the two most important pieces to that team's success last year. I mean, after Mac Jones, you know, it was pretty much J.C. Jackson, Trent Brown coming back in the second half of the year. You know, and what's his name? The tight end, Hunter Henry. I mean, that was pretty much, you know, the extent of, or I would say 90% of your bright spots last year.
You know, Justin, you're right, but I'll tell you, like, since you brought up the name, I think Hunter Henry is a little overrated. I mean, he caught 50 passes. I mean, he was great in the red zone. 8 touchdowns. That's good. But, I mean, it's not like he was like, you know, Travis Kelce or something out there. Like, he was okay. He was solid. He wasn't special. I'm glad they have him, and he's certainly better than what they had the year before. But I wouldn't say that this guy is like a top 5 or even 10 tight end. I think he was an above average tight end in the league. So I think just to the point you're trying to make is that, you know, however you categorize Henry, they got a lot of holes on the roster.
Yeah,
I mean, still
100%. They have a lot of holes, and it's going to be very interesting to see if or how. I mean, yeah, if and how they can fill them. And even if they do fill them, is it enough just given the current landscape of the rest of the AFC? So,
yeah. Yep. I honestly, Justin, the only path forward is if they hit on Jones. If Jones takes steps and he turns into like a Drew Brees or, you know, that level of player, then it's going to cover up a lot of holes, because that's how it goes. I mean, you get a Brady, a Rodgers, a Brees, you know, Manning, it covers up a lot of holes. And I think that's the only hope that this has. And I'm not giving up that hope, to be honest with you, because I think this guy is much better and much more talented than people really gave him credit for. But you know, the bottom line is he's going to have to do a lot on his own, and all the things you hear about him, mental toughness and resiliency and intelligence. Well, guess what? No offensive coordinator. You know, you lost McDaniels, no continuity in the coaching staff. You know, he really is going to have to use a lot of those traits to get himself to the next level. And if he can, I mean, all that means to me is that he really is a special player. But that is truly their only hope right now. I mean, we'll see. We could have a very different tone next week when we record again.
Yeah, well, we will see. Like I said, there's still a lot of, you know, it's early in free agency. There's still a lot of impactful names. You know, I don't want to say ginormous names, but definitely impactful names across multiple different positions that are still, you know, looking for a home. And, you know, you never know. You add a couple guys and, you know, you never know what can happen. So we'll see. But like, I agree. Yeah. I agree with what you said 100% that, you know, this all kind of hinges on Mac Jones and what he's able to do in terms of his development the next couple of years.
Yep. And you know what, Justin, just one more point, you know, you can say, oh, these guys are mid-level guys. I mean, Wes Welker, Rodney Harrison. I mean, you could go the last 20 years, how many players has this team brought in and they've flourished here. So am I disappointed that they didn't bring in J.C. Jackson? Yes. Am I concerned because this team seems to have an aversion to bringing in top-level talent? Yes. But if you're going to say, what's my hope? It's that you find the next Wes Welker. You find the next guy that's a mid-level guy that you turn into a superstar in here, because your system and the team and the talent and the culture and all the things that we would like to still believe are real, but we're all questioning after the last 2 years. But I think that's the hope for this franchise.
Yeah, 100%. We will we'll definitely see.
We will see, Justin. And that's all the time we had. This was a long episode, so we want to thank anyone that listened. But there was just so much, and there's even things that I wanted to get to we didn't get to. But we'll have to save them for next week. And let's hope we're pleasantly surprised when we do the show next week, and we can say, hey, you know, maybe they lost JC, but they brought in this guy, that guy, and this guy, and I actually think it's going to be a net gain. Let's hope for that, man.
Let's see what the Pats do. Let's enjoy some basketball this weekend. Let's enjoy some long, bright, sunny days that we're getting now and hope for good weather. It's going to be good weather in the Boston area this week. And let's be glad because winter's behind us. The dark, dark, terrible part of the sports calendar is behind us. And football is back. And the off season is back in its own way. Football off season is back, I should say.
Yep, 100%. And, you know, just to build off of that, I think, you know, not only is it exciting to have football back, but I think all the dynamics we're seeing just from, you know, Rodgers resigning, Brady unretiring, Russell Wilson moving around, some of these other teams making moves in free agency, what's going to happen with the Patriots. You know, there's a lot of – where's Deshaun Watson going to go? There's a lot of storylines that remain to be played out. And I think it's going to be a very exciting 2022 season. I think there's a lot to look forward to if you're a fan.
Absolutely, Justin. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you to everyone that listened. Look forward to next week. Have a great week. And we will be back then to discuss everything that happened in the NFL. Have a great night, everyone. And happy St. Patrick's Day.